Think about the last time you tried solving a problem by working harder at the same solution, only to get the same disappointing result. You're not alone. For 40 years, one pattern has repeated itself in boardrooms worldwide. When strategies fail, executives don't question their approach. They just push harder. It's like trying to open a door by pulling when it clearly says push, except the door is a multi-million dollar business decision. This stubborn loyalty to broken frameworks isn't just inefficient, it's expensive. What if the problem isn't execution, but the mental models themselves? We love the narrative of corporate titans clashing, Apple versus Samsung, Coke versus Pepsi, like nations at war. But customers don't experience competition this way. When you're standing in a store aisle, you're not choosing between corporations. You're choosing between this laptop and that one, this soda and that one. The competition isn't happening in boardrooms. It's happening at the shelf, the checkout counter, the moment of decision. This shift in perspective changes everything. If competition occurs at the front line, then the people closest to customers, not the executives furthest away, have the most valuable insights. Yet traditional hierarchies assume wisdom flows downward from the top. The irony? Those making the biggest decisions often have the least direct contact with the actual battlefield. A poor product won't be rescued by being part of a prestigious company. Mac users might love Microsoft Office, but that doesn't make them switch to Windows. The real question becomes, does your organizational structure add value or just add layers? Despite 40 years of obsessing over shareholder value, investor returns barely changed. 7.6% annually before the shareholder revolution versus 7.8% after. The problem is mathematical. Stock prices aren't based on current earnings, less than 5% of valuation, but on expectations about an unknowable future. This trap forces executives to raise expectations continually, leading to inevitable disappointment. When someone poisoned Tylenol bottles in 1982, CEO James Burke recalled every bottle, despite the product representing 20% of profits. The result? Stronger customer loyalty, tamper-resistant packaging innovations, and better long-term returns. When Paul Polman became Unilever CEO in 2009, he told short-term investors to sell, focusing instead on long-term innovation and sustainability. The stock rose 266% over his decade. Companies that don't worship shareholder value often deliver the best returns because their leaders build actual businesses rather than manage investor expectations. When Instagram replaced its retro camera icon in May 2016, users revolted. The reason reveals a fundamental truth. Your brain isn't an analytical machine, it's a gap-filling machine craving automaticity. Familiar products process more fluently, requiring less cognitive effort. This processing fluency increases exponentially with repeated exposure, explaining why market leaders maintain dominance even without superior products. Every purchase reinforces this pattern, creating cumulative advantage. 35 years ago, Tide led Surf by just 5 percentage points. That small lead expanded until Unilever exited entirely, leaving Tide with over 40% share. Building sustainable advantage requires four principles. Become popular early, even through aggressive pricing or free offerings. Design explicitly for habit formation, like BlackBerry's addictive notifications. Innovate within established brands rather than creating new ones. P&G learned this when Era liquid detergent failed, while Liquid Tide succeeded despite launching later. And keep communications simple for the subconscious mind, avoiding complex messaging requiring conscious attention. Strategic planning has become a dreaded ritual. Spreadsheets multiplying, meetings dragging on, minimal impact resulting. Traditional planning perpetuates the status quo rather than generating novel strategies. The alternative, unstructured brainstorming, produces radical ideas that can't be translated into action. We're stuck between analysis paralysis and impractical idealism. The breakthrough? Effective strategy isn't about what is true, but what would have to be true for a strategy to succeed. This shift transforms everything. Instead of debating current reality, we explore future possibilities. Reframe problems as choices between mutually exclusive options. Generate multiple possibilities, creative scenarios describing how success might unfold. Then identify what must be true for each possibility to succeed. This transforms contentious debates into productive dialogues. Instead of attacking ideas, skeptics specify conditions. For me to be confident, I would need to know consumers will embrace this offering. For each barrier, design a test, with the most skeptical member leading design. Review results and select the possibility with fewest serious barriers. Managers worship data, with 81% of executives believing data should be at the heart of all decision-making. But creating great choices requires imagination more than spreadsheets. Revolutionary innovations like personal computers and railroads couldn't have been predicted by analyzing existing data because they introduced enormous behavioral shifts. The critical skill? Distinguishing between necessity, elements we cannot change, and possibility, elements we can alter. For cannot elements, apply rigorous analysis. For can elements, let imagination lead. Culture is the invisible rulebook guiding employee decisions. When powerful, it obstructs strategic change because people instinctively follow ingrained patterns regardless of new directives. Executives try changing culture through grand declarations, but these typically fail because culture emerges from interactions between structures and behaviors. It cannot be changed by decree. Nokia's failed transformation illustrates this. Despite CEO Jorma Olila's 2004 restructuring to foster entrepreneurship, employees continued following old cultural rules that punished risk-taking. The company fell from $300 billion market leader to Microsoft's $7.2 billion acquisition target. The key insight? Culture only changes when enough people adopt new behaviors that become internalized norms. When A.G. Laffley became P&G's CEO in 2000, he found a bureaucratic culture where strategy reviews featured extensively bulletproofed presentations nobody enjoyed. He changed one rule. Business units would send materials ahead, and meetings would focus on three discussion topics with minimal presentations. After 4 years, rich, exploratory strategy discussions became the norm. Most corporate functions operate without explicit strategies, defaulting to damaging patterns. The servile strategy tries being all things to all people. The imperial strategy prioritizes functional work regardless of business alignment. Four Seasons demonstrates how functional strategy supports competitive advantage. While most hotel chains minimize labor costs with 73.8% industry turnover, Four Seasons defines luxury as service, with employees as the driving force. By making entry-level jobs career starting points, they created a virtuous cycle. With 20-year average tenures versus competitors 1 year, they invest 10 times more per person in hiring, training, and rewards, without higher overall costs. Companies struggle managing knowledge workers, caught in destructive hire and fire cycles by structuring knowledge work like manual labor. The breakthrough is organizing around projects rather than jobs. Employees flow to where their capabilities are needed. P&G's Global Business Services created a flow to the work organization after outsourcing routine tasks. This structure proved remarkably effective during the Gillette acquisition, allowing P&G to integrate the massive $57 billion purchase in just 15 months, half the normal time, saving nearly $2 billion. Management thinking has long separated strategy from execution, with Jamie Dimon famously preferring first-rate execution and second-rate strategy. This false dichotomy allows consultants to blame implementation failures on clients. The truth? Strategy and execution are the same thing. The prevailing metaphor treats organizations like human bodies. The brain, top management, thinks while the body, organization, executes. This creates choiceless doers at the front line. Yet Mary, a top bank teller, developed her own sophisticated customer segmentation approach despite it not being in any manual. Her strategic insights could have benefited the entire organization, but the choiceless doer model prevented upward sharing. Instead, view corporations as whitewater rivers where choices cascade from top to bottom. executives make broader, long-term choices, while frontline employees make concrete, daily decisions affecting customers. This choice cascade model creates positive reinforcement. Downstream choices are valued, and feedback flows upstream, improving higher-level decisions. As design evolved from physical objects to corporate strategy, intervention design, how an innovation is introduced, became as critical as the innovation itself. IDEO popularized rapid prototyping, engaging users early with low-resolution prototypes and improving through short feedback cycles. The same principle applies to strategy. Rather than presenting completed plans that might be rejected, engage decision makers throughout, confirming problems, exploring possibilities together, and agreeing on analyses. Intercorp Group's CEO Carlos Rodriguez Pastor Jr. exemplifies this. When making Interbank competitive, he brought four colleagues to study U.S. banks rather than going alone, enabling him to build an innovative team that successfully diversified into businesses serving Peru's middle class. In a world worshiping data over imagination, we've forgotten something fundamental. The mental models guiding our decisions matter more than the effort we put into following them. You can work tirelessly with the wrong map and never reach your destination. Thriving companies aren't executing hardest. They're questioning assumptions, learning from the front lines, and understanding that strategy isn't something you do to people, it's something you create with them. The question isn't whether you're working hard enough, it's whether you're thinking differently enough.